sit at my table.
Dignity.
Security.
Freedom.
Freedom.
Respect.
Justice.
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 Equality.
Equality.
Remedy.
And succession.
Fairness.
Fair trial.
Privacy.
Right.
Will.
Peace.
Movement.
This is my mistake. Let me make it good. I raised the wall, and I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum.
Identity.
Family.
Home.
Conscience.
Expression.
Expression. Expression.
Expression.
Participation.
Democracy.
Welfare.
Work.
Work.
Leisure.
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 Health.
Education.
Culture.
Culture.
Human rights.
Charter Dana.
Fill in the border. I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM, and welcome to everyone tuning in over the internet at cjtr.ca. Welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We are building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a collection of musicians from around the world. My name is Jim Hutchings, and this week I'm joined by special guest hosts Kendra, Riley, Ashley, and Alexandra. Welcome, everyone.
Thank you, Jim.
And we have a guest here that we know of in a different capacity, Brian Brocheza.
Thank you, Jim.
So I guess I'll let our special guest host take over from here, and we'll find out what capacity you're here in, Brian.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, to get us all introduced, I'll start by saying my name and what school I'm from. I'm Riley, and I'm from Campbell Collegiate.
I'm Kendra, and I'm from Tom Collegiate.
I'm Ashley, and I'm from Tom Collegiate.
I'm Alexandra, and I'm from Winston-Knoll Collegiate.
Along with our homeschools, we are involved in the Campus Regina Social Justice Program. Campus Regina Public provides high school students, grades 11 and 12, from across the school board division, the opportunity to enroll in specialty 2-credit courses. Each course is industry or community supported and features approved training that may not be available in our homeschools. Students engage in learning opportunities with others who share their passion for a specialty field of study, which better supports our learning as we prepare for the transition to post-secondary studies and the workplace. In our social justice class, the 2 credits you can earn are from the list of Psychology 20 and 30, Law 30, Social Studies 20 and 30, and Native Studies 20 and 30. Today is the International Day to End Impunity. Impunity isn't a topic you learn about in school. It isn't something that stands out to everybody, and it isn't recognized a lot. By dictionary, impunity is without punishment and without consequences. The International Day to End Impunity is a call to action to demand justice for those who have been killed, for exercising their right of freedom of expression, and shed light on the issue of impunity. Every day around the world, journalists, musicians, artists, politicians, and free expression advocates are silenced, often with no investigation or consequences. Some of these individuals were murdered for expressing themselves, and their killers still remain free.
3 years ago today, in the southern Philippines province of Maguindanao, 100 armed guards overtook a civilian convoy and executed the passengers in what is known as the Maguindanao Massacre. 32 out of 57 victims were journalists. This makes the incident the deadliest single attack against journalists on record. In this attack, 4 of the 32 journalists, whom were female, were allegedly raped before being executed. They were also beheaded. As a result of execution by 2011, only 93 out of the 200 suspects in the massacre have been taken into custody. Only 63 were charged. No one is yet convicted.
Unfortunately, the killing of journalists and impunity for the perpetrators is not unique to the Philippines. Over the past decade, more than 500 journalists have been killed around the world, and in 9 out of the 10 cases, the killers have walked free. Among the most infamous murders is that of the Russian journalist Anna Politkovsky, who was killed in 2006 after years of reporting on human rights abuse.
This afternoon, we have Brian from Amnesty International to elaborate on the topic of impunity. Welcome, Brian. We're hoping you can help answer some questions we have about the massacre in the Philippines.
Well, thank you.
Why do you think this massacre occurred, or why do you believe what the cause was?
Well, first off, I'd like to thank you, all of you, for coming in today and especially bringing up this topic. As you know, the celebration of the International Day to End Impunity is in remembrance of this particular event, the Maguindanao or the Ampatuan Massacre. Basically, as you briefed, it happened about 3 years ago in 2009, and what had happened was that, let me give you a little bit of a brief overview for our listeners out there, because it's a very complex event on what had happened during that time. In Maguindanao, which is part of the southern is a province in the Philippines, it's just southern, as Kendra had mentioned. It's actually part of the island, the second largest island, which is called Mindanao. And now what had happened is that the Ampatuan, which is actually a town in Maguindanao, has been under control of the Ampatuan clan, or shall we say political clan. And the Ampatuan has been in power since the 1980s. And that was even after, that was during the Marcos era. So even during that time, they've been established. So this thing has been going on for decades and decades and decades. So what had happened was basically in 2009, even though the Ampatuans had a really good hold or a really strong hold of the province, what had happened was that Ismail Mangdadatu, who actually filed his candidacy for mayor, for governor of the province in 2010, and basically what had happened was, even though they're from the same political party, the Lakas Kampi CMD party, what had happened was that there was a lot of political tension between these two families. And even Arroyo, President Arroyo at the time, was trying to mediate these conflicts. And what had happened was they kind of didn't settle on who was going to run for governor during the time, because what had Ampatuan Sr., who was currently the governor at the time, wanted to pass over the governorship to his son. And he had been running throughout all these decades unopposed. And what had happened, basically, is despite all this conflicts and despite all this political rambling, is that Ismail Mangdadatu, who wanted to run for the governorship, what had happened was that he had wanted to file his candidacy, and to ensure that the violence wouldn't ensue, is that he had sent his family members, mostly females and mostly older people, because in Mindanao, it's actually mostly an Islamic of faith, most of the people there. And they respect a lot in their community, females and elder generations. So they didn't think that they would be attacked because of that. And on top of that, what they had done is that they called media. So as you had mentioned, there was 32 media men and women that were present during that time to ensure that, you know, that the filing of the candidacy would go through without a hitch. What had happened, unfortunately, on that day, on the 23rd of November, 3 years ago, was despite having women, and his wife was included there, Mangdadatu, who was pregnant, and his aunt, who was pregnant, and his sister, who was also pregnant, were all killed and massacred, even though there were journalists that journalists present, and all the things that they tried to do to stop that. Apparently, the Patuans didn't think that they would be susceptible to government because they had been in control of the province for so long. So we have to remember that these people are trying to make a change for the country, for that province, and a lot of people lost their lives. And to forget that, I think, it's really a shame if we do. That's why we have to remember this day to end impunity is very important, not just for the Philippines, but for the whole world.
How do you view those people to whom that don't agree with social change in our current civilized world? For example, women fighting to get the right to be educated, but the men of the country that don't agree with it?
That's a really, really good question. And I think the importance of this day is that we really need to express ourselves, because the International Day of Impunity really is a remembrance of the freedom of expression for artists, journalists, musicians, and writers. And really, there will be people out there, unfortunate as it may sound, there will be people out there that will oppose social change or progress. There will be people there that have self-interest that are above others. And the only way that we can really, really make a change in this world is if we together support expression of freedom. And if we support, in any way, artists, journalists, musicians, and so on and so on. One thing I wanted to bring this up a little later, but one other thing I wanted to note is that this generation, your generation, is actually one of the most expressive generations in ever. Why? Because you've got so many traditional forms of expression. Like we mentioned, you can write, you can sing, you can do all these things to express yourselves, but also the new media that has never been available to society before is now available to your generation. And some of the people of your generation have been so expressive in that they've used Twitter, YouTube, Facebook to make social changes. In Egypt itself, one of the driving forces was apparently social media in the whole toppling of the Mubarak regime. One thing that I just want to add is that despite this, we can't stop. Just because we've made one change doesn't mean that, okay, we're done. You got to keep fighting. So, yes, and in Egypt, they're still facing a lot of conflicts with their new president, but people have to be mindful of that. The change doesn't just happen in one instance, and that's done. Even in Canada, we shouldn't be like, Canada's really progressive when it comes to social justice, but is it over? The fight is never over for justice and social equality and all these things. Like you mentioned, women around the world are still fighting for equality. And it's not to say Canada's perfect. Canada has progressed in that field. But last week we even talked about it. There's still ways to go for women to be equal to men. So don't stop.
Where do you think things stand diplomatically in the Philippines?
I also wanted to elaborate a bit on that because that's also a really good question when it comes back to what had happened in Maguindanao. And another thing, yes, I'd mentioned, it's so important for students and younger generation, older generation to be more involved. That's important. One thing that's missing most of the times is that people aren't getting more educated about certain scenarios. And a lot of things happen where people just jump on the bandwagon because it sounds, okay, yeah, that sounds black and white. It's simple. Most of these instances, when it comes to social justice, is never as simple as black and white. Never. Even in the whole Maguindanao event, a lot of people are saying, 3 years, well, how come nothing's happened? How come half of the... You got to understand, it's very complex diplomatically. There's the new president, who's Benigno Aquino. And before that, the previous president, actually, there wasn't any movement on legal issues. But the new president actually, with Secretary de Lima has actually pushed and pushed and pushed for changes to happen during these events. But it's going to take a while. You got to understand, there's 300 witnesses. There's 200 people that have been charged. And the in Maguindanao, the Ampato ones are still in power. Okay, the three main people that were involved, Ampato one senior, junior, and the other governor, who was also an Ampato one of another province, have been taken out. Yeah, they've been expelled from politics since 2010, I believe. But you got to understand that the Ampato ones still hold as a family. We're not saying they're all guilty. We're not saying they're not. All we're saying is that they still hold 31 of the 34 provincial provinces. So they have strong political clout. They have very strong political clout. And also, I think we're going to mention it a little later, or maybe not. A lot of the witnesses are actually some of the witnesses are being killed. And because the Ampato ones still hold power, politically and financially, it's very money does make bad things happen sometimes under the wrong hands. They've actually released 10 million pesos to bribe the 300 each of the 300 witnesses. Not all of them have received it, but that's actually what is reported as being paid to each. So 10,000 pesos is about $250,000. And where you got to consider that the actual money a family makes for a whole year is $2,000, that's a lot of money. So diplomatically, it's not easy. And even Mandadatu, whose family was murdered, he became governor. He is governor right now. And his life was, there was a car bomb, and he almost, two people that he was with died. And these things are, even though he's governor, the Ampatuans still hold a lot of power. So while the current administration is pushing and pushing and pushing, it's entrenched in society. It's entrenched. So it's still a long ways to go, but you got to keep fighting. A lot of people just got to keep the word out there, and you just got to keep fighting.
Could this mess have been avoided by early intervention?
It's hard to speculate because it's a hypothetical question, but I'd like to say, I'm optimistic to say, maybe. Because of the fact that, like, how long ago? Because you got to consider, like I mentioned, the Ampato senior has been in power since 1980s. That's like a long time ago, especially in politics too. And it was actually reported that some of the people that were interviewed during the time, the Ampatuan family has never happened in Philippines that the region or that particular area has ever been politically united because it's been so divisive. But he, as the leader of that clan, has been able to unite them through whatever means possible. So, but I am optimistic because if I said no, that means what's the use of actually calling for change? We got to keep, that's the thing though, a lot of these people that were affected, for example, a lot of the journalists' children who died and everything, they're actually carrying on the fight. They themselves have become journalists themselves, despite what had happened to their parents. And the only thing, one of the most important things we can do is continue on expressing our desire for change. Like I said, the International Day of Impunity, that's what it's about, freedom of expression, and we just got to support that.
Thank you, Brian, for your time in answering these questions. We'll come back later to you for questions about Syria.
Thank you.
Thanks once again, Brian. Get Up, Stand Up by Bob Marley was written by Marley himself while flying out of Haiti, where he was shocked by the amount of poverty in the lives of Haitians. This was the last song Marley ever performed on stage, and here it is for you.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't
think and make everybody feel high. But if you know what life is worth, you would look for yours unhurt. And now when you see the light, you stand up for your rights. Yeah. Get up, stand up. Yeah. Yeah. Stand up for your rights.
Your ism, schism, game, dine go to heaven in the Jesus' name, Lord. We know and we understand. Almighty God is a living man. You can fool some people sometimes, but you can't fool all the people all the time. So now we see the light.
What you gonna
we gonna
do?
Stand up for
yeah,
our
rights. Yeah,
so
yeah.
You better
get up, stand up
in the morning.
Give it up,
stand up for your rights.
Hi there, guys. For those that are just tuning in, our topic today is impunity. The International Day to End Impunity is a call to action to demand justice for those who have been killed for exercising the right of freedom of expression and shed light on the issue of impunity. Today we have myself, Riley, from Campbell Collegiate. We have Kendra and Ashley from Tom Collegiate and Alexandra from Knoll. Alongside us is Brian as well from Amnesty International.
So, the worst part about these conflicts is that they haven't effectively ceased the massacre. A recent massacre in Syria has resulted in over 400 bodies found dead in the town of Deraa. The government proposed this to be the worst single massacre in the country's 17-month-old civil war. Because the people of Syria began to stand up and regain their freedom in their country, the Syrian army was deployed to quell the uprising. Our teacher, Ms. McIver, mentioned to us briefly, at Victoria Park approximately 6 months ago, a rally was held where several young boy survivors talked about their experiences during the massacre.
One member of the Syrian army whom survived lived to tell their experience. As they began spraying them with bullets, I threw myself to the floor. I was already covered in blood, but was not shot. I pretended like I was dead. Four members of my family were killed. Another resident, Abu Matassim, added, the Syrian army stayed in some of the houses. One belonged to my friend. People were forced to serve them food and tea. Just before they were leaving, they killed the family in the house.
This issue hasn't stopped. Bodies are still being found throughout Syria. It hasn't affected the population of 30,000 people, where 90% of these people have now fled for safety, some being killed in the process. The outcome of this crisis affects people and families worldwide.
I would like to invite Brian to come forward again and help me to elaborate on this topic.
Well, thank you.
How does the massacre in Syria affect us in Canada?
Well, first off, I'd like to say I'm really impressed by you guys. Oh, sorry. I'd like to say that I'm really impressed that you guys have actually brought up a topic that had happened years ago and something that's happening currently. Syria, obviously, since 2011, has been a really, really, how do we say, a really sensitive issue where a lot of people have been dying, to say it bluntly. In Canada, we have about a Syrian population, if my statistics are correct, we have a population of about 30,000 Canadian Syrians, or basically people with Syrian descent. And in Syria at this time, there's about 40 to 50,000 people, as you've said, who've died. So that's the population of all of the Syrians in more than the populations of Syrian Canadians in Canada. So, put it simply, it's hard pressed to, if you talk to someone who still has Syrian connection, it's hard pressed that they wouldn't know someone immediately in their family who's been either harmed or or killed by what's been going on in Syria. And, you know, it's really hard pressed for you to do for that to happen, because a lot of people has still strong ties to Syria, and they've got family and everything. So that's one of the things that it affects Canada.
What can we, as people of Saskatchewan, do to help?
Like I mentioned earlier, just remember that you're free. We just have to remember that we're free to express ourselves, and we're free to information. A lot of us take that for granted, and the fact is, we shouldn't. A lot of people take a lot of our rights for granted, and we really shouldn't. We should be pressing for more condemnation of what's going on in Syria. We should be helping out, especially getting more knowledge on what's happening. The Red Cross organization obviously has a lot of information there. So if you even want to go a little bit more extreme, people can even pull their money from their neighbors and send it over. You know, there's 2.5 million Syrians that are displaced right now. 2.5 million. That's a lot of people. There are people that are scattered all around Syria, and in Turkey and in Jordan, and they're living in horrible conditions. And that winter is getting harder. It's getting harder for these families. And all this information actually came from a friend of mine who's from Syria, and he's actually living in Kuwait, if I'm not mistaken. He actually told me, you should really Google Zaatari camp in Jordan and see how horrible the images are there. 2.5 million. It's sometimes with us, when these injustices that are going around the world, it becomes just numbers to us, and we become desensitized to that. So we have to remember that these are people's lives. People are affected, and a lot of people are dying out there, and it's a shame. Yeah.
What do you think people worldwide should be doing to help this cause?
Like I said, a lot of issues out there are complex. It's not a simple, and if anyone tells you it's a simple black or white issue, it's not. It really, really isn't as black and white. And we've got to remember that every small thing that we do does contribute. Now, we mentioned earlier the International Day of Impunity was actually brought about through a simple letter writing. It's not simple, I should say. About 1,643 letters were sent, and basically to different countries and different governments. And that just imagine, about 1,000 letters made this whole remembrance thing happen. And in Amnesty, we support those things. It's a small thing. People think it's a small thing, but it's not. And I got to reverberate back to what I said earlier. I know I've said that you are one of the more expressive generations in the world. But I also want to quote a cliche. But I think it's a cliche for a reason. It's Edmund Burke, where he said that for evil to triumph, basically, good just has to do nothing. And in a country like Canada, where we're enjoying so much freedom, we're enjoying so much rights, it's easy to get lost in that and take for granted all those rights. It's easy. But if we all stop and just forget about all this injustice that's going on in the world, in our country, in our neighborhood, and say, that's not really my concern, it's someone else's concern. The moment we do that, we then realize that, we're to blame if evil triumphs. So in Syria, if something wrong is happening and we're not doing anything about it, I don't know. All I'm saying is that it's our responsibility to try and do, even if it's little. 1,600 letters actually made the Day of Impunity, International Day to End Impunity. 1,600 letters. That's nothing. That's so small. A whole Regina could write 200,000 letters if each person wrote a letter. Oh, sorry, that's Regina. Yeah.
What is your opinion on the nearby towns fleeing? Was this a safe decision?
like I said, I spoke to my friend about this, and he had mentioned they were caught in a hard between a rock and a hard place, put it simply. If they didn't leave the areas where there was bombing from and violence, if they didn't leave, there is risk of them being bombed or worse. Let's put it put yourself in that shoe, right? If you were there, you would be either in risk of violence, which is what's happening to people who stayed, and if you had fled, if you had fled to Syria, Turkey, and Jordan, you can go back to my reference to the Za'atari camp in Jordan, where people are not getting you could be in a refugee camp. And we all know, being a refugee, especially in times of crisis, sometimes refugees are considered second-class citizens, if any, if they're given any rights at all, or if they're even given their bare necessities. So would you want to risk being attacked, but you still have provisions in your own home, or flee the violence, but risk not having enough food or clothing or shelter? I don't know. I don't know if it's the right thing to do, because I wouldn't know if I was in that situation what I would do.
What do you think the next option should be? Will the army spread out? Will they be defeated? What are your expectations of the outcome?
Like I said, I'm not a political expert. All I'm doing is that I'm just trying to get more informed, and to my knowledge, and like I said, I've tried to talk to people, try to do my research. All I know is apparently the Saudi army is getting weaker. But in and of itself, their support lines are shrinking and all that stuff. And the FSA, which is the opposition, is getting stronger. Although these are just information I'm getting from media, I'm not an expert at this kind of things. How it plays out in the end, there's a lot of pressure that goes to Assad, President Assad, who is the current president of the Syrian government. It has a lot to do because there is likelihood that he might not just give up Damascus just like that, as some leaders have previously. It's not easy for them to just give that something like that up, especially when violence has started. Although, I'd like to say that there's going to be a positive outcome to this whole thing, but it really depends on people just getting more informed. And I think that's the more important thing, is that we just be aware of what's going on, and we keep pressing our own leaders. You know, because I know the Secretary of Defense here in Canada has been condemning the Syrian regime. Maybe that's enough, maybe it's not. It really is, because the moment I say, okay, you're supposed to do this to someone, I'm actually on the wrong. It's freedom of expression is on an individual choice. And all I'm saying is that we shouldn't take that for granted, and that people should take up causes if it really, you know, matters close to them.
How do you feel about people posting videos of the shootings and dead bodies all over the internet after the massacre?
Okay, me and my friend, we both agree these are really difficult images to watch, and they're very shocking, and they're very, you know. He said, "I've even been desensitized to the extent of the sight that a cut-up body doesn't faze me anymore." And I myself, when I was doing research on the Ampatuan massacre, it was hard to watch. It was hard to watch. But then that's when I realized I have been sheltering myself so much to these kind of atrocities because I don't want to see that. I don't want to see gore. Do we want to force people to look at these things? I don't know. Do you think it's effective enough? Shock and awe? I don't know. Is that really the way we're supposed to go? I don't necessarily think that's the only way. I think there are a lot of avenues. But the important thing is that these images are available for people that, you know, want to really know what's going on. That's the important thing. That we gotta take into account in Syria before this whole violence, information was not flowing out. Information was not flowing out. Journalists were not allowed underground. And now, because of social media, let me bring it back. Social media, and because of Facebook and all these kind of things, these information are actually out there for us. It's available, but to force it onto other people, I don't know. If you think it's effective in spreading your message, that's the beauty of the freedom of expression concept. You're free to express your ideas, your thoughts, in a way you think it's appropriate. But you have to be mindful that these are actually people. These are people who have, these are people. These aren't just pictures. And do we also want to go to the extent that pictures are always available of gore? We could be desensitized. That would also be a really bad thing if people start to become desensitized to these images and they become like, oh, okay, that's gory or whatever. So be mindful of what you're posting. I know there is value to a certain degree, and it all depends.
Okay, well, thank you for coming and talking to us today. We really appreciate it and giving us some information on more of our topics.
We chose the song I Dare You to Move by Switchfoot to sum up our question period about Syria because it gives you the inspiration to stand up for what you believe and that you are the only person needed to make a change in your life. Listen carefully to the lyrics.
Welcome to the planet. Welcome to existence. Everyone's here. Everyone's here. Everybody's watching you now. Everybody waits. What happens next? What happens next? Dare you to love? Dare you to love? Dare you to let yourself up on the floor? Dare you to move? Dare you to move?
All right, welcome back. Today we're focusing on impunity. I know we've covered a lot of heartfelt topics today and a lot of stuff. I know myself that if it wasn't for this project and this radio show today, I know a lot of us and the community around us isn't aware of this issue and that today is the International Day of Impunity. We focused on the Philippines today, which was a massacre that happened 3 years ago, and then we also focused on a more recent massacre in Syria, which was very devastating for a bunch of families and many civilians. We have Brian today here from Amnesty International. He's been helping us out with a lot, teaching us so much more than we've known. Alex, do you have some more questions?
Yes, I do. Why isn't the UN doing anything to help the situation, or what have they done so far?
Okay, thanks for that question. With regards to Syria, like I said, every case is really unique. Every case is never the same as a previous event, even though they say, oh, there are similarities or there are issues here and there. I'd like to deviate a little bit from that question, and I think we should ask ourselves, like, I think you brilliantly put it there, is that sometimes we don't even know a lot of these things are going on. A lot of media is being covered on Syria and even on Palestine. What's going on the last few days, so where in Palestine, there was a lot of shelling and there's a lot of missiles that were going through back and forth in Gaza in particular, in Palestine. And we know a lot of that is covered in media and what's going on in Palestine. And like I said, we need to be informed. But I'd like to put it a little bit in context. And it's not this issue is more important than another issue. All I just want to say is that in Israel and Palestine, which from 1987 to 2007, there's actually been about 7,000 recorded deaths on estimate, right? But also going on in the news, and it hasn't been getting as much attention, although some news agencies have been talking about it. In the DRC, or the Democratic Republic of Congo, since the 1990s, there's been 5 million people who have died as a direct result of the conflict. I'm not saying that this issue is more important than that issue. All I'm saying is that a lot of people don't know what's going on in the DRC. Sometimes we screen our information ourselves as normal viewers, as normal people who take in information. There are grave issues out there. So I'm not saying that the 7,000 that have lost their lives, or even more in Palestine and Israel, is, you know. All I'm saying is that they're getting way more coverage than the 5 million people that have died in direct result in the conflict that's happening in the DRC, as I mentioned, the Democratic Republic of Congo, in which I believe the M23 rebel group has actually just taken control of Goma. So it's not a competition, never, when it comes to social issues. The most important thing, though, is that we just need to be informed. And I think it's a great thing that you guys from the campus are actually learning, because that's the first step. You need to learn, need to get involved. How you do it and what issues you really tackle throughout your lives, that's your choice. If you don't want to do anything about it, that's your choice as well. But the most important thing is that our rights are there. The information to know about social injustice, whatever it may be, is there. You might say, oh, in Canada, we're great here. It's not just about Canada. And like I said, no country's perfect. There's always space for there's always room for improvement, social improvement. And I think that's the most important thing. I think I think you guys are doing a great job. And, you know, you're I commend you for doing this great thing for your generation. Thank you.
Okay, so what do you think about the Syrian army targeting women and children?
I would, unfortunately, unfortunately, in Syria, just let's wrap up a bit. In Syria, it's the attacks have been indiscriminate. Basically, they haven't been women and children have been attacked, have been harmed, and I don't know if it's one side more so than the other, but there are women and children dying. And what's happening is that it's indiscriminate, really. So they're not a lot of the violence that's happening is it's not just focused or okay, we're aiming for this. They're almost it's like free for all. It is a war down there. And we've got to really realize that 40,000 people since 2011 have died. 40,000 people. I know sometimes numbers get easily desensitized, but I don't know. Is it enough? Is it not enough? Where do we draw the line? I'd like to put that question to you guys. Where do you think it's enough? And where do you think... Because the thing is, the future when it comes to social justice really relies on you guys, on the new generation. Us oldies will probably fight as much as we can. But if your generation, everyone just suddenly says, enough. We want an end of impunity, not just on the... We don't want to celebrate it, but we want the day to come where the end of impunity is here. That there is no more impunity. That's what you should aim for. That's something that's a noble thing to be aimed for. But like I said, how you use your time and all that, it's all on you.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, Brian. Well, today we've definitely covered a variety of topics, and I know there's a lot going through everybody's head right now. I think the biggest action to do right now, we all were interested in this topic. We've became engaged in it. We've got information about it. And now, what else is there left to do? We all need to step forward, use the freedom that we have, and speak openly, and make sure everybody is aware of this situation, and do as much as we can.
I never really understood what impunity was until researching this topic, and my condolences go out to all the families that have lost someone for standing up for what they believe in.
Impunity should be something that everyone is aware of and understand. It is an overwhelming subject, but everyone can contribute.
To get more information on the topic, you can visit many sites such as Amnesty International, where our guest Brian is from, World News brought to you by Guardian.com, and articles from The National.
Our social justice class also has a blog in which you can follow at crpsocialjustice.wordpress.com to hear our opinions on the latest worldwide social justice issues and updates on what our class is focusing on throughout the semester. Thank you to everyone who has been a part of our radio show today, and thank you to Brian from Amnesty International for joining us on bringing forward the issue of impunity. Also, a thank you to our wonderful teachers, Karen McIver and Ryan Wood, for giving us this opportunity to elaborate and inform others about this social justice issue.
Okay, that just about wraps it up, and I'd like to thank everyone for participating, Kendra, Riley, Ashley, Alexandra, and thank you for being here, Brian, and being a guest. And so we're going to close this week's Human Rights Radio on CJATR Community Radio. We hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. Our goal is to increase the awareness of and contribute to a discussion of human rights issues at home and around the world. To discover how you can contribute to the abolition of human rights violations, visit our website at amnestysaskatchewan.ca or check out our Facebook group at Amnesty International Saskatchewan and follow the links. We'd also like to invite you to letter writing on Tuesday nights at Atlantis. It happens every Tuesday night, and we write letters about various causes both in our own country and around the world. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."